seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, everybody. You're welcome along to the Ryan Line. It is the Thursday of the PGA Championship. I am here in studio in Dublin, and Shane Ryan is in, as I'm going to call it, What am I doing here?
Iran-a-mink. It's pretty easy. Iran, like say like the country Iran.
I'm not saying Iran. You say Iran. I say Iran.
It's easy.
Iran-a-mink. Iran-a-mink. Okay. It's not.
John Ram.
Your buddy. Yeah. Your buddy.
John Ram.
Okay. terrible start to the podcast. How are you? You are in Iran-a-mink.
Yes, I am. Good job. Yeah, you nailed it. In Iran-a-mink, course looks great. A little overcast today, rainy. So people are scoring already, man. It's like Steven Yeager and Cameron Smith or Bud Cauley. This is going to be wild, man. It's going to be a putting contest, I think.
Aldrich Potgieter right there. Somebody must have tipped Aldrich Potgieter because his odds had crashed, absolutely crashed overnight. I think as people realize, you can just hit the ball anywhere in this place as far as you possibly can. This podcast, by the way, we're going to do a mix of, you know, maybe a couple of questions, but actually Shane's there. So we're going to just have a general PGA chat as well. I, watching a lot of the coverage over the last few days, was sort of split 50-50 as to what type of tournament this was going to be. There was a lot of talk of comparisons to Augusta National in the shapes of the greens, though the greens are a lot bigger than Augusta National. But in the sense that if you're 10 feet to the right of where your landing spot should be, you could be coming back 60, 70 yards into the fairway. But also the bit of none of that matters because these guys are just going to be hitting wedge in everywhere from whether it's the middle of the fairway or from some deep rough. But we know at this stage that doesn't really matter to these guys. And it did make me think of that, of a period of the Masters as well, where it felt, and maybe this was just some sort of bias from watching it on TV, it felt at times you're almost better off being in the rough than being in the middle of the fairway.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been out walking. The rough is a little sticky, but I think you're mostly right. I don't think it's going to be that punishing. I'm looking at the leaderboard and the screen up here. It's been one of those discussions that's, you know, been for 2 days. It's been nothing but talking about how the course is going to play. So finally, it's nice to have our first results. And it's early, but people are scoring. I mean, people are scoring. Even walking the course, it just felt short. And this is not Oakmont rough, right? This is not like Oakmont where if you miss the fairway, you're dead meat and you're going to have to like hack it out. Yeah, you can play from the rough here. I don't necessarily think it's better to be in the rough, but I think it's, you know, this isn't Bethpage where the Euros can just like hit anywhere they want and then dunk it out to 5 feet and then make the putt. But it is, you know, you're going to get away with a lot here. And so, you know, like you said, like Potgieter, I mean, I actually think it's a good course for Cam Young, but you and I know have talked about how we haven't had a very surprising winner in a long time. It seems like a lot of like big names are winning majors. A lot of favorites are winning majors. Time will tell, but I can see this being one where, yeah, it's like the best players don't have the advantage they normally have because it's not that difficult. So you could have like a Potgieter shooting 19 under or something like that. I don't know if it's going to be him, but you get my drift.
Why do you think, for all majors, and there's still the odd upset here or there, but really since Jimmy Walker in 2016, there hasn't been a surprise winner of the PGA. And even then, there were few and far between. There was a Duffner, but Duffner was a good player. Jimmy Walker was a good player at that period as well. A Wai Yang, you know, you can go back to Sean McKeel and Rich Beam as well. Is it the change in schedule for some reason has altered the course of the PGA in terms of the quality of its winners?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I saw a stat that I won't be able to reel off everything, but it was like since the move to May, every single person who's won has been in the top 25 of the Masters, has been this high in the world rankings, has been this high. So I think it may be largely coincidence, but you know, it's funny when you look at second place in that time. You know, but here's the exception, honestly, is Phil Mickelson. And I know it sounds crazy to call him an exception, but he wasn't in top form that week. I mean, that was like a surprise, and he never won again. So there's maybe that, but yeah, like you said, even if you look at the second place guys, it's Tiger, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Hovland, Scheffler, Bryson. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's very much a, for whatever reason, since moving, yeah, it's really catered to the favorites. But I would think if you looked at the other majors, it's not too different. I mean, it feels like, okay, yeah, we had JJ Spahn last year in the US Open. There's always exceptions, but even he was playing great. You know, he had almost won the Players against Rory. So I don't know. My colleague Joel Beal wrote an article last year that golf is getting a little bit more like tennis, where you're getting more predictable winners. Obviously, it's never going to go to that level because that's a one-on-one sport. But yeah, when's the last time we saw someone that really, really shocked us?
I wonder if it has something to do with the rise in prize funds, and that these guys don't need to think about money across the course of the year. And we're seeing an emergence of maybe the next stage of that with what Rory is doing now, which is barely playing at all, aside from the majors, yeah, and being right in a position where, you know, I don't think we're ever going to see Rory as world number one again, because I don't think he'll ever play enough to put himself in a position to be world number one again. And that, where once upon a time, every week had an importance because your livelihood depended on it. Now we're at a stage where the top 20, the top 30 guys are turning up, even at signature events, more to just hone their game as much as anything else. And maybe sometimes you need a bit of competitiveness. Mm. You want to get yourself a bit of form in that. But they're now in a position with private jets, with everything Rory did at Augusta, even the practice he might have done here as well, and the joking of spending a week living on the course and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. That now, almost like an ATP event, that's what the regular events are going to be. And all they care about and all they have to care about is this.
Yeah, you might be right. There, I mean, it's an incomplete explanation, I think, but I think there's something there that is part of it. The only thing I would push back on is going, you know, the other guys are going to care too. You know what I mean? They're all, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's just a bunch of specialists at this point that are coming into the majors prepared and are sort of become more expert at peaking for these very specific things.
You're well used to walking around PGA Tour golf courses and major golf courses. If this wasn't a major, would it stand out as a golf course?
It's very nice looking. Like the conditioning is superb right now. The holes are unique, but they're unique in that old school sense where it's, you know, this course was built in 1928, completed in 1928. And so it's like, you know, it's surrounded by roads on most sides. You can't really expand it that much. You can kind of artificially go, okay, well, we found a place where we can put the tee for this par three. So now it's 220 yards instead of 180 or things like that. But it's short. It's not a big course. And they're not Oakmonting it up. Like I said, they're not doing the Oakmont thing where you make the rough impossible. So yeah, it's very cool looking. It's beautiful land. There are a few neat holes, but I guess my point is, the cool structure of the holes is sort of irrelevant to these guys. You know what I mean? Like whatever little challenges it poses to people, like who can hit 230 or 260 yards off the tee, aren't relevant when you're hitting 300 yards. So what's neat about the course may not feature that much. However, it is beautiful land. And I've already seen, like, Bryson had a putt on, I think, the second hole, where, you know, there are some slopes to these greens where you can kind of see, if it dried out, you could kind of see it being sort of tough and, you know, punishing a loose short game.
Bryson, 2 over after 5, as we sit here at 3 o'clock on Thursday for your round the clock coverage. Michael Block is going to be the next player to tee off at 5:10. What's the Blocky vibe? I'm at that stage of the coverage of it, feels a little bit like there's a teeny bit of Bryson-esque bullying going on with this guy.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny where it's, you know, he came on the scene in such a big way and his personality was fun, but it also seems like he was like really embracing it, right? I mean, he was just like, he knows this is the moment of his life, and like that could come across as annoying to some people, the way he's like, what? You know? So I think it's like one of those stories where you're like, I really enjoyed this for a week, but 2 years later when he's back there, you're like, all right, buddy, you've had your time. Like,
yeah.
We're sick of this. We had our moment with Michael Block. We don't want to hear about him again. But it's funny, you know, the way the media works, it's like, wow, well, this was like on fire 2 years ago. So let's hit the Michael Block thing. Let's hit the Block thing. And all the consumers are kind of like, no. And all the media people being forced to write it are like, this sucks that I have to write this. It sucks that I have to write Blocky. So I think that's where we're at. It's just Blocky fatigue. It's not necessarily anything he did. It's just the way it works.
Yeah, there's a touch of somebody who wrote a one-hit wonder wanting to be treated a bit like their Paul McCartney about it. And it's like, yeah, place. Totally. You had one good song. And he did. There was a moment of, is he too sweet to be wholesome? Of, oh, you had the hole in one. And, oh, I didn't, even though someone came up and hugged me straight afterwards, I didn't even know for another 40 seconds that the ball had gone in the hole. I was like, well, what, you think he just randomly came up to hug you for a decent shot to 5 feet?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
100%.
Yeah. I was just Wikipediaing the PGA Championship there, and maybe this is an insight into the future I shouldn't ignore. They have a list of winners, and then in 2026 it says Ricky Fowler, 10-9.
Wow.
So they've also changed. Not only have they predicted Ricky Fowler, he's won it in match play, which is a remarkable achievement. That would be,
it would be exceptional if they managed to change that in the next 3 days.
The beard had a question for us during the week, which I think is a fair one, on Ricky Fowler. Why does Ricky wear orange on a Sunday? Okay. It's clearly not lucky for him. Surely someone within his team should point out that orange is not the color for you, Ricky.
That's funny. Well, that's his whole thing, right? It's his whole brand. How do you get away from that? You know, your whole life has been orange. Granted, it's toned down now. He's not wearing the jumpsuits anymore. But it is funny to think. I had this thought last week when he was competing at the Truist. And it's like, if he does get to a point where he can contend at a major, it's been so long. I mean, at LA Country Club was the last time he did. It's like, is anything going to be different? Or is he just going to be exactly the same where he can't, you know, the nerves are kind of overwhelming? Wow, Scotty just did it to like a foot. Things are going off here, Nathan. Things are going off. These guys are scoring. But yeah, no, with Ricky, it's like, do something different. I don't think the color will make a difference, but why not try it?
I think he was in a full orange jumpsuit for one of the rounds, either last week or the week before.
Really?
And I also thought he had sort of moved away from it a little bit. I've told this story before of my trying on the Ricky outfit suit one time in McGurk's golf shop about 2011 and going, I think I can pull this off. And thankfully realizing, don't do it. Now, again, at the time, Ricky was at the height of his popularity, so it cost about $200 to look like that.
Right.
I was reading a piece on Fowler when he was in contention last week, and one of the golf writers going, like, it will be the story of the year, Anthony Kim-esque almost, if Ricky Fowler was to win the PGA. Like, Ricky Fowler's 37 now. How would you, if you were writing a piece coming into this and you'd write 3,000-4,000 words on Ricky Fowler, the story, is it one of underachievement, over expectation at a young age? How do you sum up Ricky Fowler's career?
It's a great question. It's hard to say that he underachieved because he did have a really good career, you know? I mean, he had his ebbs and flows like all these guys seem to do, but his highs were really good. I mean, he won a Players' Championship. He won a bunch of PGA Tour events. You know, he's played in Ryder Cups. I mean, he's had a nice career. So it looks like, what, 6 PGA Tour wins? Yeah, one playoff event, one Players. He did the first one at Quail Hollow, then, you know, various ones since then. But yeah, I guess it's just a matter of the majors. And so, you probably remember in 2014 when Rory won two, Ricky Fowler was top 5 in all 4 majors. And that was a pretty notable accomplishment. They kind of played it up in a way that was weird, where it's like, okay, cool. But like, it's an interesting thing to happen to you, but I wouldn't be bragging about it, because also implicit as that is he couldn't win any. When you look at his career, who is he like? I mean, he's a little bit like, I don't know, not quite Lee Westwood. I won't compare him to him, but imagine if, you know, Adam Scott had never won a major or something. You know, he definitely should have at some point. He's not a dud either. This is not Charles Howell, where it's like he was supposed to be the next big thing and he just kind of stinks. Or he's mediocre. And that stinks is a little harsh for Charles Howell. But I think he's, you know, he's had a good career and he won a Players. So someday they'll say he won a major. But, it would be a great story if he won. And I think it would change the entire tenor of his legacy in his career if he could somehow do it.
Sort of Sergio-esque, though not with the same level of expectation. Like, Sergio was potential boy wonder. He was always a little bit on the coattails of McIlroy first and then Spieth. And maybe, again, that's part of his popularity, is at a time when we were all so into it, because you had Rory and Spieth coming along. He was almost in that grouping, but never quite there. I sort of buried the lead on this, didn't I? Like, you're there on the ground. There's only one story everyone's talking about: Rory McIlroy's little toe. What do you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. So right now, I mean, he's playing, right? It feels like one of those kind of things where he'll play today, and I bet if he doesn't play well, he might WD. Like, if it's painful and he goes out and shoots like a 74 and everybody else is like 7 under, he might just go, this isn't going to work. He curtailed his practice rounds, but I still don't think it's that clear how bad this is, but it must be pretty bad. I mean, what do you think about, do we know how much of the toenail he ripped off? Do we know that little gory detail yet?
Well, were you not, again, you know, I can understand, you're there. He took off his shoe and his sock to show to the media behind one of the holes. What were you doing? Where were you?
I didn't get to see his foot.
Oh my God.
Otherwise I would take photos and sell them online on weird websites.
These are basic things, Shane.
But no, how much of the toenail was it? Do we know? Was there a photo? I didn't see a photo.
It doesn't sound good, though. A blister under your toenail and you're ripping the toenail off. Ooh, no, thank you. Yeah. It is on his right foot, which is the main thing, so it shouldn't impact his swing, but it seems to be the walking is the issue. You've had a good week. I'm doing you a disservice. You've, as always, press conference time, Shane Ryan steps up. Top marks, generally, from watching public for... That was a good question. And also, do you know what I think you're the best golf journalist at? Follow-up questions. I don't know how much thought you put into your follow-up, which is, he's like the John Ram one, where he kind of gave you an okay answer, but you weren't afraid to sort of go back with a slight, it's sort of the same thing again, but slightly different, and he gave you a really good answer.
Yeah, I think it's easy in those press conferences to get fixated on your question and then lose the sort of conversational follow-up or to listen. It's hard to listen sometimes because maybe people are like, oh, I'm in front of the microphone and I'm nervous and I just get it out and then I phase out. So I just try to listen. And so it's like when Ron, after that question, said, I don't really do this as a human because it's not worth it, you know? So it was just kind of like, well, is that true? Because human beings always look back at their mistakes. I mean, it would be impossible not to. And then, yeah, he was just in the right mood to go, yeah, of course I look back. And the second answer was a little bit better. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm a hero. I'm great.
Well done. I didn't get Rory McIlroy's toe, but you got a good answer out of John Ram. General Ram vibes from that press conference then? Because I feel like there's a sadness around John Ram that I'm creating in my mind that may not exist in his reality at all. And that was part of what you were sort of touching on, that we're all going, John Ram has deep regrets and he was going to be the people's champion and now he's not. And he was the most popular guy in tour and now nobody talks to him and God, he must hate himself and hate his life. And John Ram's going, I've got 500 million quid in my bank account and I kind of play whenever I want and I'm okay with everything right now. What's the reality from what you see of John Ram?
No, I think it's more the former. I think there are, like, I get the sense that there are regrets. He's always been someone who understands history and understands his legacy and wants to win majors. And I think there is, he says all the right things, but you kind of have to, so it's all interpretation, but I get the sense that he understands this has dulled his competitive edge a little bit and it has not necessarily been good for him. Now, meanwhile, he's on LIV. He's like second place or better. He's winning or second place every single week, but he wants to play well at these majors. And I think he's also fully aware of where LIV is in people's mindsets, where it's like, if you're just tearing it up over there and then you come and you're finishing 40th place in majors or missing cuts, people just kind of scoff and the LIV wins don't matter. You know what I mean? They just go, yeah, that's great. But the guy, when he comes to the PGA is stinking it up. And so I think he puts pressure on himself. I think he really wants to be back in the conversation. And, I wrote this about him. When you look at the BBC quotes he gave in 2024, there's one interview where he's basically saying, I hope this would be a catalyst for the PGA Tour and LIV coming together. And now he's kind of saying, he's like, no, I never thought I would be the one to do it. I never thought, I just thought like, you know, if, you know, PGA is negotiating with Liv, and why can't I? I truly do think that at least some people in this team thought there's no way the PGA Tour can hold out when I go over. You know, this is going to be the tipping point. It's a little bit of guesswork there, but I think it's pretty well supported by the evidence. And yeah, it just wasn't the case, obviously. And so I think he is sort of conscious of, no matter how much money he has or anything like that, the bet he made didn't pay off in that sense. And I would be shocked if he didn't think that it has hampered his sharp competitive instincts a little bit. If he didn't go, listen, I might have just given 3 years of, you know, my prime away in terms of majors. So I do think there's that element there. Now, he does have, you know, but he had a lot of money before. You know, I don't know that Rom cares that much about money. As crazy as that sounds, I think the reasons he went were different than money. So I don't think that's much solace, I would say.
The dulling his competitive edge is interesting. I was talking about this on Off the Ball this morning, of the Liv fanboys or bots or whatever you want to call them would always point out when there'd be criticism of his performance at majors of his incredible consistency on Liv and finishes top 10 every week. And then you're going, well, you have a 1 in 5 chance of finishing top 10. 25 of the guys, it's sort of like the Masters, 25 of the guys are never going to win anyways. And that the level required to finish high up in Liv is so much lower than it is to finish high up on the PGA Tour, that you lull yourself into a false sense of security of, I'm playing a very high level of golf, where actually maybe it's not as high as it needs to be. And you get found out then when you suddenly rock up at a major.
Yeah, and that's a thing. And it's like, but that also creates a pressure, right? So it creates pressure like, these four tournaments each year are going to essentially define what people think about me, because nobody's watching Liv. And so it makes it even harder. And so I just think there's a lot going on there where I would think he's ready to come back. I mean, all these guys probably are, but I think him especially, I think there's probably some regrets there.
How's your relationship with Scotty been this week?
Didn't ask him a question at his press conference. I didn't ask Rory either. I can't tell you how many people were like, go ask Rory if he could switch one part of his game to somebody else. Like, everybody wanted me to repeat the question. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. Be hilarious, but I'm not going to do it. So I didn't ask Rory a question, and I didn't ask Scotty a question, but Scotty was great. Scotty had a really good press conference, and Scotty, you know, this is true for a lot of people. He's very different when he's sitting down on a Tuesday with the media versus when he is, you know, just coming off the course and it just hates his life because he's mad because it wasn't perfect. And then, yeah, Rory's press conference was good as always. And then Rory was interesting. I wasn't there for this, or I was still in the press conference area, but he kind of hung around and talked with certain media for like 30 or 40 minutes after, which is insane to think about the difference between that and last year at the PGA, where he wouldn't even do like a scrum after his rounds a few times. So yeah, he seemed to be in a good mood with the media. I think he's definitely handling winning the Masters better this year than he did last year, whatever the reasons are. Look, it's a peaceful week so far, Nathan. There's not PGA Championship always has drama. Someone's always getting arrested, or, you know, there's always something going on. You know, Rory's getting dinged for his driver. It's been calm up here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, this
By the way, have you been to Philadelphia?
I have not been to Philadelphia. Did you? Sorry,
it's unbelievable.
I mentioned burying the lead about Rory McIlroy's toe. What about your bread?
Oh yeah, bread last night. It was great. It was great bread, and it was like when you spend 2 weeks thinking about the bread, it may inevitably not be the galactic, you know, transcendent experience you think. But it was extremely good bread, and I was really impressed. And yeah, it's, you know, best free restaurant bread in America. That's not me saying that, Nathan. That's the Atlantic magazine.
Wow.
So it was good. It was good.
And how much did you drop on dinner to get your free bread?
I don't know. Somebody paid with a company card.
Oh,
these weeks are unbelievable. I just come and I just am like, yeah. I had steak frites.
And then when the accountants come back and they're like, this is quite expensive. You're like, the bread was free. The bread was free. What more can you want? Yeah, maybe the drama this week is that we get a Stephen Yeager, Bud Cauley, Michael Brennan playoff. Michael Brennan definitely.
This is funny. So.
He's definitely hitting that period of, you know, top 50 player in the world could walk into your golf club and not a single person would be 100% sure. Could walk into the press room on the PGA at the PGA Championship and, you know, could pass for a member of the broadcasting crew.
100%. Yeah. Same with like Steven Yeager. Like, I don't know right now if you force me to pick him out of the lineup, how good I would be at that. Man, look at Alex Fitzpatrick back up there. Just insane how he's been playing. So yeah, this is, you know, the big guys are teeing off now. Like the biggest name at the top of that. Oh, we have Xander. So he's there. But other than that, it's like Alex Fitzpatrick, Cam Smith is up there. Where did that come from? Nikolai Højgaard, but the rest is just, yeah, you're going down the OWGR here, Nathan. This is wide open. I say that now, and by like 4 p.m. today, Scotty will be 10 under.
Maybe this is Alex Fitzpatrick been something of an outlier, but, you know, with Christopher Reitan winning last week and he came through the top 10 European Tour list, gets himself on the PGA Tour, is good enough to be a winner. And at a time when we've spoken about this so often, the restrictions that are put on getting into signature events in the biggest tournaments, like Fitzpatrick goes from winning a European Tour event just over a month ago to, you know, fortunate brother, one of the best players in the world, gets to play the Zurich because of that, wins the Zurich, and then proves actually he's well capable of playing at this level, that if anything, we need to up the promotion relegation stakes here.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking too? Did you catch this European Tour, the DP World Tour winner last week, where he's 28 under, this guy from South Africa, Premwall? I was like, you know what they need at majors now is a curiosity exemption, just one, where it's like up to the last day, up to the last week, we can go, I really want to see this guy play. Like, if, you know, if he's 28 under at this event, if he's on an all-time heater, get him in the field. Let's see what he's got. Because, that's the thing. It's like, you can't tell me that guy. I know it's DP World Tour or whatever. The way he played last week, probably nobody on the PGA Tour would have come near him. Right? I mean, that, he's just on a different galaxy with that level of win. So, yeah, I mean, well, I think that's what you're going to see from rollout next year. I don't think you're going to see these 72-player fields anymore, which is great. I think 120, 20. I mean, yeah, you're gonna have a lot more people in there.
All right. So it's day one. It's underway. It's Stephen Yeager and Bud Cauley. And we got Rory this evening and his little toe. And we'll see how all of that works out. Anything else you've seen this week we should be aware of?
No, we're putting out, you know, we've got content about history of Aronimi. There's some cool stuff there. But in terms of the tournament, I just love. So you get here Monday and then you're kind of getting through Tuesday. The narratives are emerging. Now this is the good stuff. Now we're getting to see what goes on. And I'll just say this. I don't know if you agree with me. I am okay if the winning score is 21 under once in a while. I don't mind that here. I think if we're just going to have some fireworks, like Valhalla was really fun when Xander won over Bryson. Oakmont was an absolute drag for most of the week with the hard course. I'm a little bit reversed on that, where I used to be like, give me carnage, give me these low scores. Now I'm like, let's see these guys light it up on a cool course that's short. And, you know, who cares if they're 21 under? Let's do this thing.
All right. Did you see Patrick Harrington and his swing aid on the driving range?
I saw a reference to it, but I didn't see it with my own eyes.
No. Cam Young was beside him and didn't look best impressed. I don't need this going through my mind.
Patrick's an ideas man. You know, some of them are going to hit and some of them aren't, but he's an ideas man.
Who's your winner this week?
Cam Young, I think. Young, Fitzpatrick, and Scheffler. What bold picks, I know. But I just think the three of them are so good that one of them has to win, and particularly Cam Young looks good. We got Bryson already over par and Rahm already over par. Isn't that interesting?
Wow. I'm going Haotong Lee. It's Haotong's time, surely.
It's a great pick. Tremendous pick.
It's there on a par with your Young and Scheffler picks.
Young, Scheffler, Fitzpatrick. It's the bold, like pick the three
you
best
went,
players.
Crazy there. You went wild. And I'm going Haotong Lee. All right. Shane is going to be on.
I'll tell you this. Sorry, real quick. One of my colleagues, Jonathan Wall, who does the equipment, he knows everything he says, Ricky's going to win this week. So there you go. Maybe that plus your Wikipedia Ghosts match play win says something.
Wow. All right. We got to leave it at that. Shane Ryan, you'll be backing off the ball across the week. We shall talk to you next week for our post Aronimink Ryan line. Get your questions in on the Discord channel, golfweekly@offtheball.com. We'll talk to you then. Good luck. All my exes wear Rolex, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little JD started.